Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome to Five on the Floor here on the Five Reasons Sports Network and on all the Five Reasons podcast feeds. You can find us on Red Circle, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, also on the Five Reasons YouTube channel where you can see us. I'm not sure that you want to do that, but you can catch all of the other South Florida content as well. Plenty on the Dolphins, but also on the Panthers and the Hurricanes. So just make sure you like and subscribe, FiveReasonsSports.com. Unlike the newspapers, we do not have a paywall. And check out the great sponsors of the Five Reasons Sports Network. That includes a new sponsor here. You can find him at MortgageByArash.com. That's MortgageByArash.com. If you're looking to make a quick purchase of a property, you better do that before interest rates are 15%. They've got you covered over at MortgageByArash.com. Competitive rates, down payment options as low as 3%. Fast closings, most in less than 20 days. Credit scores starting at 620. So if you're delinquent like me, that will help you out. First-time home buyer programs are available, and also borrower assistance programs are available to help with down payment and closing costs. So reach out to Arash, big Miami Heat fan. You can find him at MortgageByArash.com or 954-601-3708. That's 954-601-3708. And now, today's episode.
Down to Biscayne. Yikes. Five on the floor, ride for my dogs. Where here's the thing, you can check the score. Hustle hard, couple scars, wearing bubble frogs. Just like Buckley said, you in trouble, y'all. Kept the floor playing, got an all band. Y'all seen the block, stop with one hand. And Pat, we trust, it's power, have the guts. We're here to bring the heat, y'all can hang it up.
Welcome to Five on the Floor, a daily insider show on the Miami Heat and the NBA, featuring Ethan Skolnick, Greg Sylvander, and Alex Toledo, plus others from the Five Reasons Sports Network.
If you're watching on YouTube, I just realized we're going to need to update that video with everything that's happened this postseason. Today's floor plan, I'm Ethan Skolnick. You can follow me at Ethan J. Skolnick and at Five Reasons Sports. I got Alex Toledo. You can follow him at Tropical Blanket, and from ESPN, and from my memories in the Palm Beach Post cafeteria, Israel Gutierrez, who you can find on ESPN. What's the Twitter handle these days?
It's IZ Gutierrez. And if you are watching on YouTube, shout out to that ceiling of yours. And I've always wondered, I've always thought that, you know, the pandemic and these streaming services have done wonders for the ceiling fan business. And, you know, you've got a lovely ceiling fan there. So thanks for showing it off to us.
No problem. This is actually my daughter's playroom because she's not here, A. And two, my office is a mess. And so I only use this when Sasha's not here, because otherwise she complains, my 8-year-old, that I should be cleaning the office and doing other things around the apartment. And so basically I just come in here when she's not here and try not to mess it up. And then she finds when I leave crumbs on the floor and stuff like that. Anyway, Israel, we appreciate it. We will try to get a ceiling fan sponsor in here shortly. So that will help us with the business. You're here because you've got your own podcast out. And so we're going to talk about that. And we're going to go back in time a little bit from the perspective of you and I as reporters, and Alex, who at the time was more of a fan, but yesterday he's asking every single question of every single person at the podium, to the point that this morning when I turned on NBA TV, all I heard was Alex's voice, which was good. But you've got a new podcast out. Tell us about it. It's 4 years of Heat, correct?
Yeah, it's called 4 years of Heat, and I will take any sort of criticism on the name. That's fine. 4 years of Heat with iHeartRadio and the NBA. The first episode releases tomorrow, the 23rd, and it's an 8-episode podcast. It's basically taking us through those 4 years again, and just, you know, all the weight that came with the pressure of LeBron showing up here, you know, the ride all the way to that championship, you know, taking you through everything from, you know, the early failure to the success to the very end to when he left, and just going through with a lot of the people that were part of it, you know, not the big three themselves, but Shane Battier, Ray Allen, Udonis Haslem, Mario Chalmers, and then guys from other teams like Joakim Noah, Matt Bonner, Boris Diaw. And then, you know, prominent national voices in terms of broadcast media, whether it's Rachel Nichols or Dan Le Batard and Tim Reynolds and some others. And so it sort of retraced these steps. Dan Ben-Gay, also a familiar voice. But it's just, it was so fun to go through. And like to think about, Ethan, it's been 10 years since the Ray Allen shot. Like that is mind-boggling to me. It feels like it's been, you know, it's just 2 or 3 years ago. Like all that stuff happened before the Warriors run. And it just kind of makes you feel a little bit old, but it was cool going back through all that stuff and just remembering some things that maybe not everybody would. And then there's some details in there that I know, even if you followed the team closely, you probably don't even know.
All right, so let's get to sort of how this came together a little bit, because you mentioned the names who did participate. The big three guys you said did not participate. Who was are the guys that you got to participate, who was the hardest to convince to go back through some of these memories?
Probably Joakim Noah. He was the guy who, I mean, he said, he just right off the top, he's like, he's only doing this for me, and he doesn't really like talking about it. And even like somebody like Matt Bonner said, he only talks about it because they were able to recover and win the next year because it was so painful. But you know, somebody like Boris Diaw, he joined me from like France. He joined me from his, you know, his house in over in France, and you know, more than willing to discuss it. But yeah, Joakim was just one of those where, you know, he obviously was a major focal point for that Chicago team, especially after D Rose went down. And you know, we talked a little bit, I'm not sure if it's getting in, still got a couple episodes to finish up, but we talked a little bit about Philomena Tobias and the double middle fingers when he was getting ejected. And it was, you know, he's such a sort of soulful, spiritual guy. And the one thing that came across with him is just, even though it was sad, even though it was demoralizing to think about sometimes, he loved the level of competition at that time. And it was just, you know, for everybody who said that LeBron was ruining the league by putting that big three together, it created some intense moments between them and some other teams. And it was just like purity of competition. And that's what, you know, Joakim loved about it. But yeah, he was the one that had the most difficult time talking about it. I mean, unless you include the people who just flat out said no, because they probably didn't want to talk about it even worse than Joakim.
Well, you know, the one guy I'm surprised, because you mentioned there were four teams I kind of associate as rivals of the Heat during that era, which is Chicago to a degree, of course. You know, they were the ones.
Two in the East and two in the West, right?
Well, I was actually going to say three in the East, because I was going to say Chicago, Indiana, Boston.
Okay.
And then I was going to say San Antonio on the other side. I mean, I guess the OKC series too, obviously, but I think of those three in the East, because the Chicago, look, series, the Heat came in as a two seed. They were not the one seed in that series. They were not really supposed to win that series. LeBron didn't win MVP.
Right.
No thanks to me, since I made a mistake with that vote and voted for Derrick Rose, and LeBron never gave me. And Alex is shaking his head here. He was angrier at me for voting for Marc Gasol as Defensive Player of the Year. But that's
yeah, that will never. Oh, it lives forever. It lives forever, that mistake.
Sometimes, you know, you strain for impartiality, and so you end up going against your instincts, which is how.
But to your point about the Celtics, though, it's weird because yeah, they pushed him to Game 7, and LeBron had that great game, but that was more LeBron to me. It was more about him overcoming the moment. It could have been any of the rivals, you know what I mean, in that moment. To me, Indiana, because they were so surprising, because they were so physical, and Chicago, because it was, I mean, that first year was just so much, like the most three and most intense, or two of the three most intense regular season games ever, that Chicago team. And then the other team that I put, the other team in the Western Conference, and maybe this has a little bit of residue from 2006, but the Mavericks. Not only did they beat them and force everything to change, including LeBron's philosophy, Spo's philosophy, but they beat them the two times in the regular season. They made them, you know, the 9-8 bump gate, and then the only other game that they lost in that 21-22 stretch was the Mavericks. And so it felt like they were the reason for so much.
The way Spo talks about it, he'll say they almost got him fired twice. Because Spo talks about that in another organization he would have been fired three times, and we wouldn't be having these conversations that people are having on my timeline right now, where they're arguing whether Spo is more Bill Belichick or Don Shula. At the time, there was firespo.com websites.
Yeah,
because we weren't supposed to keep him when LeBron came in. We weren't supposed to keep him at 9-8 when we waited for 55 minutes outside the locker room while Dwayne was basically reading them the riot act inside. And then things were getting leaked to Chris Broussard for ESPN.com to make everything blow up the next day. And that was Dallas. And then it was Dallas again, of course, in the 2011 finals. with what happened with LeBron, but also with Mike Bibby playing ahead of Mario Chalmers. Right. And I have a long-term theory on that. But those are the primary teams I think of. Dallas should be in the mix for sure. I guess with Indiana, to me, they were kind of the annoying little brother. Like they were punching up at the Heat all the time. Lance Stevenson, primary. Ray called him a nincompoop. I don't know if he got into that with
you. That was like the third year of it. And he was almost like their last resort, if you will, because the first year kind of got the heat off guard. But you remember Dwayne was going through the knee things and wasn't himself until you got to like game four. And, you know, you didn't have Chris Bosh. So, man, it's crazy. You started Dexter Pittman as a champion in the playoffs. You started Dexter Pittman in a game.
He never played again.
Never. I mean, he got suspended in game six of that series for unnecessary flagrant two on Lance Stevenson. And yeah, never played again.
Never played again.
Life. And then the second year with Indiana, it was that, man, they won game one on the, you know, the buzzer beater from LeBron and then lost game two. And it's like, wait a second, this wasn't supposed to be this hard. And then it became that, man, we must overcome Roy Hibbert, which is the only team in history that has ever said that. And so that part makes Indiana just, and then, you know, you got the Udonis experience with Tyler Hansbrough and everything that happened there. So to me, it makes Indiana that team be one of those rivals because it made you go into that place and dig deep the way Dwayne did and LeBron did in that game four to score 70. Like there weren't too many teams that made them do that. Chicago did, Boston did for that game six for certainly. And then Indiana for probably two of those, maybe three of those 4 years.
Yeah, and of course there was the Birdman getting suspended, and Juwan's confrontation, all of that stuff that happened. I'll always remember those series too. The Wade thing was the one that always sticks out to me, is that him going at Spo on the sideline, right in front of me at Widworth. If everybody knows what Dwayne actually said that day, it would have gotten a lot more attention. I remember people were looking for that video, and then Udonis jumps in there, and then Dwayne goes to see Tom Crean. LeBron goes to see The Dictator. I remember that because we were in a movie theater where we were the only people in the movie theater with LeBron, and he was cackling during the whole thing. And then Dwayne comes back, and he and Bron, you mentioned it, had the greatest, to me, that was the greatest two-man performance I've ever seen in person, those three games. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jordan and Pippen, what they did, what others did together, but the way they did that without Chris, and then to come, then for, you know, waiting for Chris to come back in the Boston series, and everybody thinking that Spo was going to get fired and Chris was going to get traded, and then of course LeBron has the game six. The one guy I'm surprised, and I want Alex to jump in here with a memory or two for you, and go as a question with you. The one guy I'm surprised didn't talk was Bosh, because I know you have a relationship with Chris. What's that? Yeah.
So was I. Pretty surprised. I don't know if those guys are just doing their own projects, although, you know, audio only podcast, probably not something that they're going to have to worry about clashing with. I wonder if they just, you know, maybe didn't want to go there yet, maybe wanted to unveil whatever they want to unveil about those years on their own. And I don't blame them, frankly. Like, I mean, I have a great relationship with Dwayne, too. And you know, I was a little surprised that he didn't do it, but I totally get it. And, you know, this is an NBA supported or backed podcast, right? So, if they tried to get us some guys, and you know, if the NBA couldn't get them, I'm just like, all right, that's fine. That's totally understandable. But it's also still going to be presented in a way where you can hear their voices, because I have access to all the NBA stuff and all any of the broadcasts, any of the post games and stuff. So you'll still hear their voices. And you know, I think they've talked in spots. You know, I remember we used a clip from Chris Bosh on the Old Man and the Three podcast with JJ Redick, and he was really good. And you know, as much as it would have been great to dig it a little deeper with them, I think you kind of get the sense of what they thought, what, you know, what they went through just from talking to everybody else. And then on occasion, you know, using their archival voice.
Alex, you want to jump in here?
So it's funny. I mean, you said for, you know, I should bring up some memories. My original thought when Izzy was talking earlier there was, you know, you mentioned the guys who didn't speak, and, you know, you just mentioned now certain guys who maybe want to present it in their own way when it comes to guys who were playing for the Heat. But mm-hmm. My follow-up question was, who were the guys that didn't speak that were the Heat's opponents? Because I feel like as a journalist, I had to ask. And then the other thing was, I wanted to ask if you, what kind of parallels you see between this, you know, the Big Three team and this Heat team and what they're doing, you know, not even necessarily the X's and O's, even though, there was a lot of blitzing last night, for example, but are there any parallels there? So those are kind of
my there's a few. I'll get to those in a sec. It's funny, the guys who wouldn't talk, you know, the Spurs are really tight-lipped. They don't really say much. And even though I was kind of hoping, you know, Popovich would give me a little time, didn't get any from him. None of the Pacers. Shocked. None of the Pacers. like David West. It was another
not even former Heat great Danny Granger?
No, not – well, no. Paul George, I tried just because, you know, I wrote a story on him, his most improved year, and thought, you know, maybe he can get in there for a few minutes. I think he might have even been hurt at the time, but that we asked. It was like, no, but I mean, I get that. I totally get that part. And yeah.
What about Vogel? Did you try Vogel? Because it seems to me like he had come to terms with that whole period, particularly after he won a championship.
Yeah, I did try. Just felt like I don't know if there was no response there. It just kind of felt like maybe just didn't want to go over it again. And maybe because he doesn't have a job at the moment, didn't want to talk about that time. Maybe. but, you know, I think we got a good and you know, look, it's 8 episodes and you talk about maybe 35 to 40 minutes of actual content in there. You know, how, I mean, 4 years is a long time. It could have been 100 episodes, to be honest, if you really wanted to nail down every story over those 4 years. So you can kind of get the sense of a lot of things without having to talk to every single person, you know, around every single game.
Oh, and well, you know what? Let's save the stuff for after the break about the parallels to the current team. I do want
great point. Yes.
I got one more thing on this, because my view on that team was that it's going to live forever in its uniqueness, mm-hmm. because it was the first ever Twitter team, the first ever real social media team. Michael never had to deal with the kind of stuff LeBron did during that era. And also, Michael was never tweeting at 3:45 a.m. now or never in Dallas. I remember being at a drive-thru at a Whataburger, don't ask why, at 3:45 in the morning Eastern, 2:45 Dallas, or they asked me, 2:45 Dallas time. And we see this tweet come in from King James, now or never. And I'm like, there's no chance they're winning this series. Like he was absolutely so in his head at that point. But I don't think there'll ever be another team like it. I remember, and you and I are both close friends with Sedano, and I remember when I decided to cover them was I'd been doing the columnist stuff on the Dolphins and everything else, and we went to the big show, which they regretted afterwards, the introduction, mm-hmm. and the not one, not two, one, three. And George looks at me and goes, "You're not gonna effing cover this?" And our friend Nick Michelle, it was the next day, I spoke to Nick, and he's like, "Why don't you come back here and be a columnist and cover this team every day?" Because I knew at the time there was never going to be – why would I cover the Dolphins anymore?
Right.
But, you know, it was like there was never going to be a team like that anymore. And I don't think there will be another one that faces that kind of pressure. You know, Golden State talks about pressure. They didn't have pressure like that team did.
No.
I mean, you mentioned the Chicago thing. Regular season game. 5-game homestand where they lost all five games. And it was after that game they had Crygate, which was one of their 10 gates. Yes. And we spent the next 3 weeks trying to figure out who it was crying in the locker room.
Yes.
I know now, right? Like,
right.
It was right. There was Cablegate. Chris Bosh, all he said was he couldn't get the good cable in Toronto at a shootout, and it was an international incident. You had every contraction gate where LeBron talks about
Kevin Love. You know, imagine Kevin Love being on another team, and all of a sudden it's contraction gate.
Right. I mean, there was everything was a gate, and then of course my absolute favorite, it wasn't the first year, but the, you know, shut the F up and manage your own team, which still is. I'm Danny Ainge not willing to speak for this or no?
No, I mean, didn't even ask, to be honest. Ethan, all you have to do is go through that first 2 months of the first season, 2 months of the regular season where this time in the NBA nobody gives a bleep about. Look at the minutes for LeBron, Dwayne, and Bosch. Against Chicago, they played like 42-plus minutes in like the second month of the season. So even Spo was feeling that pressure. It was absolutely an insane time.
It was. That's so weird.
Every night was theater, right? That's kind of how it felt like in the regular season. Uh-huh. Like you mentioned, that it just feels so marginalized compared to what it used to be. You know, every night was theater.
I mean, I think they kind of helped ruin the regular season.
Yeah, they kind of helped ruin the regular season by losing, or the importance of it, by losing all those games to Chicago, and then, you know, gentlemen sweep 5 games.
Right. And yeah, that was easy. And that was, again, another of the greatest two-man performances I've ever seen, where they were down, what, 11 at the end of that game. And it was just, and they're screaming, I'm not going to spell it out, but H-A-M as they're heading to the locker room, you know, LeBron and Dwayne. It was unbelievable. I mean, there were so many moments from all that, so many little moments too. I mean, even the Dexter Pittman thing you mentioned, like I felt so bad for him. Like he was waiting the whole year to get his opportunity. Spo looked at him. We were watching. And we're like, he's never playing again. Like the level of pressure on those teams, you could not make mistakes. No. You could not make mistakes because it was going to be so amplified by everything that was going on. And even what, you know, again, I know you're with ESPN now. At the time, I mean, them sending four people to cover the team every day. I mean,
oh, the heat index. Yeah.
Right. Which was ridiculous. And I love all four guys, but having Wallace and Artovitz and Haberstroh and Windhorst to literally cover like one guy for personnel, one guy for personality, one guy for stats, one guy for strategy. Like they built a super team to cover a super team. It was, and here I was working by myself at the Palm Beach Post. Fun times.
One of the quick little things, really quick, before we go to break. One little things that Joakim Noah told me about that series is like after they won game one, the Bulls went out, passed by the Heat locker room. All the players were still standing outside the locker room, purposely making it a point to say, no, we're good. You guys didn't really take our heart at all. We're going to win this series. And he was like, not only was it intentional, but it worked.
I'm sure it did. I think as much as the media got in the Heat's heads during that period of time, the Heat got in other teams' heads during that period of time, unless you were JJ Barea, in which case that was a whole nother story. Did anybody, I'm just curious about this, because when we've done a bunch of Heat Stories episodes here, and I had Rio on, I've had Bosch on, I've had others over time, right? Has anybody ever explained what happened to LeBron in the 2011 NBA Finals? Because I've never gotten anybody to like really clarify what happened there, just psychologically to him, something. Because as we pivot after the break, there are people talking about this Jimmy run as being the best individual run since Dirk. Okay, but Dirk beat LeBron's team. Because LeBron was garbage in the finals in a way he had never been before or since. Did anybody ever explain? Because I've never gotten a full explanation from anybody close to Bron, anybody who played with Bron, anybody who played against Bron.
I will have an answer for you after the break.
Okay, we just lost Ethan there. that is definitely not ideal.
Feels like a good time to take a break, no?
No, yeah, great time to take a break.
I seriously thought you did that. And I'm like, wait a second. You
don't definitely was me, not.
You're like, I'll have an answer for you. And then all of a sudden my screen went black.
No, insane timing.
Oh, my God. LeBron's being, that's probably Adam Mendelsohn who called in and made sure. Okay, actually, Adam wasn't working for him at the time. He joined him after that series. All right, we're going to tell you about two sponsors here, and then maybe we'll get Ezra's answer, and then we'll also pivot to the current team here. I do want to mention PrizePicks. Use the code 5, FIVE. Get that initial deposit matched up to $100 playing on the NBA Conference Finals, the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals, golf, tennis, boxing, MMA, esports. It's all there. Go to prizepicks.com. Just rated number one fastest growing sports product in the country. Again, if you use the code 5, put down up to $100, they will match whatever you put up to the $100, and you can use it right away. There's no rollovers, nothing like that. It's literally free money. They got promos going on all the time. So use the code 5, FIVE, at prizepicks.com. It looks like we may have a few days off between the conference finals and the NBA finals. I don't want to jinx it, but when we do, or if we do, why don't you plan a graduation party for your kid? Go to MiamiGamingParties.com. It's MiamiGamingParties.com. They bring everything, the PS5s, the games that you choose. They got a VIP experience if you want that. Everything at MiamiGamingParties.com. They even bring you the trophies. So everything is provided by MiamiGamingParties.com. Check out the site. This is a new concept down here in South Florida. And again, you got a few days off. You got a graduation, big event, something like that. You choose the venue. They'll come to your home. You can choose another venue, whatever it is you want. Check it out at Miami Gaming Parties. That's MGP, MiamiGamingParties.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Go for a run, take a nap, maybe check the stats of the latest Miami Heat game? I've got a better idea. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, How would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. I've benefited from therapy. I went through some life changes, major life events, had some difficulties, wasn't a believer in therapy, but it helped me and it can help you also. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MiamiHeat today to get 10% off your first month. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MiamiHeat.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So let's get to that. You can give that other answer later. What we're seeing Jimmy do, now, okay, and it's cooled a little the last couple of games. They haven't been as reliant on him because the role guys are going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to find a parallel to this kind of run, and others have been trying to find a parallel. And there's a couple that come to mind, so you throw these out there. First thing, he's an 8 seed. We haven't seen an 8 seed get to the finals other than the Knicks, you know, that 99. Yeah, they didn't have a player carrying them in this degree. That was Sprewell, that was Houston, that was Camby, et cetera, when Ewing went out.
Mm-hmm.
2011 Dirk is one that comes to mind. You look at the teams, the level of Hall of Famers that he beat Kobe, beat Shaq, he beat a whole bunch of Hall of Fame type players during that run, yeah, culminating with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. Akeem, as a number 6 seed, I think every team he beat won at least 59 games, I believe, during mm-hmm. that run, and a whole bunch of Hall of Famers there. I think that was the 95 season. Is this comparable? Like, where does this one fit?
Well, in terms of those, the biggest comp to me would be Houston, because like Akeem, he's doing it on both ends of the floor and really elevating his teammates, you know, to be something that maybe they wouldn't be. Like Kenny Smith wouldn't be able to get all those open shots, right, without a lot of the attention that that Akeem brought. So I would say that's the most comparable. But I think the thing that stands out to me in this, I don't think there is a comp. And this sort of answers Alex's question from earlier about comparisons between, you know, the two eras. When, because we just talked about it, right? The willingness or the ability for Pat to, yeah, sticking balls, forget what everybody else says, riding with this guy. He's not only already good, but he's going to get better, right? And so that 2012 offseason, you remember what he did. First of all, he was so upset with himself, and that's part of the LeBron answer as well. He was so upset with himself. He wanted to, you know, go take that old offseason. He got the pace and space stuff with Chip Kelly, right? But they stuck with him, and he got better. Right. And that's what this team is doing. When you talk about a Bam Adebayo, who was a role player in college, and you give him all these opportunities to, and he just keeps taking them and consuming them and just like Pac-Man and just gets better and better. But it's sticking with him. Same thing with Gabe Vincent. Right. He was playable before, but now he's gotten to a point where he is so much better that he is more than playable. He's a starting caliber point guard on a team in the Eastern Conference Finals. Duncan Robinson, he went from doing what he does best, was just shooting and hitting 45% of his shots, to not being playable because he wasn't good enough, and then has gotten better at so many other things. The things that he did yesterday, man, if I'm Malcolm Brogdon, I'm really hoping nobody checks the tape on how badly he got his ass cooked on the perimeter with just a little jab step from Duncan. I mean, I'm pretty sure he left both feet and jumped to his right, and Duncan was like, okay, I'll go this way then. And doing a lot of things that he couldn't do before. And it's all just a testament to sticking with it and trust. And God, this is to sound like a Philadelphia thing, but it's trusting the process, because you know that they're going to teach you the right things, put you in the right positions, and give you the confidence to execute those things when you're in a game. And so That part we haven't seen really ever, like somebody emerging to the level of Caleb Martin, or emerging to the level of Max Strus last year, and he's continued it this year. Like, these are all players where you look at them and you just say, man, and when it's most important, they're performing. So why wouldn't I give that dude a lot of money? You know what I mean? Some other franchise probably thinking that those things. And so from that respect, I don't know if we've ever seen that, like the culmination of years of what's the old word, stick-to-itiveness, and just willing to believe in your guys, tweak a little bit and not listen to the outside noise, which is what Eric Spoelstra perfected from being the coach of that team, starting with his third year with LeBron and Dwayne, and you know, tuning out everything that came with it. And so all that's just a testament to everything they've all believed in this whole time and built up. And it's margins. Like, they still could have lost in Milwaukee if Giannis doesn't get hurt or whatever. But it just goes to show you that you should have faith in these guys, because regardless of, you know, how far the results go in terms of mediocrity or results that you don't like, you just know that they're not going to stay with something that's going to fail. Like, if they're sticking with something, it's because they believe it in it.
Is Spo a better coach now than Pat ever was?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think everything about the game is true in terms of bigger, faster, stronger, but coaches and strategy is a lot more different, you know? Right. You look at even some of the stuff that Joe Mazzulla is doing and Boston Celtics are doing. It's all good, you know, solid, new, you know, today's version of offense, but there's not enough variety in that to really make them as difficult to defend as they could be. And I think, you know, Spo has taken a team that doesn't have that same level of offensive variety and just maximized everybody's ability in a way that, you know, Pat's old answer was just play defense harder and get better shots. But it was never this consistent changes of, you know, slight strategic things that just kind of make a huge difference. And, you know, if Pat were coaching in this era, he would figure all this stuff out too. But the thing about that Spo is just, you know, I think him being built in those big 3 years was just so critical for him, because it was the ultimate test for him all the time in terms of strategy, in terms of dealing with egos, in terms of dealing with media, in terms of, you know, instant PR, you know, fixes and stuff. And it's just like, man, if I just trust my basketball knowledge and just go into a cave, dig in, you know, with my coaches and trust our ability to figure these things out, then we haven't really ever failed. I mean, yeah, they've hit their ceiling a couple of times and maybe had that one burp in the first round against Milwaukee. But honestly, he's been killing it ever since that first title, and he just keeps getting better.
Well, I go back to what he said that first year as he was going through it. And I remember, I think we were in Phoenix after a game, and it, on the court, he just goes, you know, in 25 years, I'm going to be able to look back and say, I coached this team. Like, that was always his perspective on it. There was this sort of peace with that, even in the storm. Like, no matter how bad this gets, like, I shouldn't be here. And that's the funny thing about this whole undrafted narrative, which is now getting a lot of attention because Spo finally spoke out about it, and I've been killing Reggie Miller for it. And now KG and Draymond are on Twitter today saying it's insensitive to these guys that you're not undrafted anymore. It's pejorative at a certain point. I mean, Gabe Vincent is 18-4 as a starter in the playoffs. He's 18-4. Okay. Now, it's not all him, obviously, but I think the reason that it's starting to annoy Eric is Eric's undrafted.
Yeah.
Like, Eric's undrafted. I'm not talking about as a player. Eric was undrafted. Like, he came the hardest route you possibly can to be a head coach in the NBA. He's not some former NBA player who 2 years later, they decide, okay, this guy has some leadership qualities, like a Chauncey Billups or something along those lines. He was undrafted, and so he's not really supposed to be here. And I think he's had that peace with it. Alex and I and Brady, we've all kind of, we've sort of marveled at the changes that Spo makes during these games. So I guess I will let you guys riff on this a little bit more, because as a tactician, to me, he's gotten much better. I mean, Alex, even you have seen over the past, since you've been covering the team, it's maybe 3 years, right, that you've been pretty much covering the team full time.
This is the fourth season, so the whole Jimmy era.
I mean, it's and part of it was in the bubble, so we couldn't see it up close, or at least a lot of it. Like, but your view is he's come a long way tactically, right?
I mean, I think so too. I think he's always been somebody who's willing to try stuff, but it felt like kind of the rap on him early on as a coach was that sometimes he would be, you know, quote unquote, too stubborn with, you know, whether you talk about matchups, rotation, starting lineup. You know, I think, you know, you've made the point in the past, Ethan, as far as, like, you know, he waited too long to start Mario Chalmers over Mike Bibby in the 11 finals, things of that nature. And
Mario's made that point too. Yeah.
I'm sure he made that point several times as it was happening, for sure. But no, like, I think, like, now is the culmination, right? I think it's the culmination of everything Spo has done. And, you know, the way he's, I think the in-between years between the big three and now with the Jimmy era, where we saw him build up all these dudes into playable rotation players, he's doing it now with, and it's not all Spo, of course. I'm not going to try to take away credit from the actual players developing in those roles, but he finds what guys are good at, just molds them and puts them in the right role, you know, helps them figure out the other things along the way. But I think everybody is playing within themselves because of the way Spo puts these guys in the right position. And then you talk about schematically, like, man, he has done so much differently just in these playoffs, as far as he hasn't stuck to one game plan. I think he's done a little bit of everything.
Well, that was part of the juice. Let's go back to 2011. All right. They're in the finals. The game plan against the Heat was very much the Greg Popovich stuff. Make him take contested two-point jumpers. If you remember back then, three-point shooting was okay between the, you know, the paint and the three-point line. The two-point was it bad for him that year, especially in the playoffs? Yeah. And they looked at those numbers, the Mavericks did, and said, "Wow, we keep him in that range, we're going to get the best possible." Or at least efficiency from him. And they really didn't have a plan for Dwayne and Chris Bosh. It was like, hey, you know, normal plan, you know, they're respected players, but this is the plan for him. It worked, but not really enough because Dwayne was doing enough because he's great and you can't really not pay attention to him. And, you know, all of a sudden they're up 2-1, the Heat are, in that series, you know, and if not for, and this is where the mythology of sports, like we all talk about, it's BS. Well, you remember the shadow boxing in game yes. 2 with Dwayne and, like, that set them off, the Mavericks, and they just
Coughing.
The coughing was later, but in game 2, the Heat were up and at home, and, you know, Dwayne hit a big shot, kind of left the hand there for a little bit in front of the bench, and then they kind of started doing shadow boxing on the way back, and that just really ticked off the Mavericks, and I don't think the Heat scored again in that game. And then so you get to game 4, and this is what if you look at the scores there, it was like in the 80s for the Mavericks. They weren't putting up great numbers. And then Rick Carlisle said, we need to affect our offense. We need to do better offensively. I'm going to put JJ Barea in the starting lineup. And that wasn't a LeBron thing. That was, oh, they got Mike Bibby on that team. JJ can guard him. And so they did that, but they also went to a zone. And that zone, that just the combination of the zone and just the little, I didn't say little people, but the smaller players in front of LeBron in the basket, it's just they built a wall. It wasn't the biggest wall, but they built a wall for him constantly. And he didn't feel good enough about taking the jumper. He didn't feel good enough about, you know, that patented fadeaway that he's got now. And so they just lost him. And he was just saying, here you go, Dwayne, do something. And, like, they were asking him to do more. But if you go back and look at these games, even that second game that they lost, like, they were there. They were in it, right? And so it answers both your question about LeBron, I think, is just that he just got out-schemed. And it's crazy. Now you throw the pressure and everything and having Wayne as your teammate and being confused, if you're Michael or Scotty in that situation, all that is quite confusing. But he got out-schemed, and he looked terrible, scoring 8 points in a game. But to
so Spo's point, it wasn't like, all Greg Doyle. It wasn't all Greg Doyle, because I remember Greg Doyle got a lot of credit for that, for asking the question in the post game press. Greg Doyle took a lot of credit for it, right? About his struggles in the fourth quarter. I to me, my perception is, I think it's both. I think he got out schemed and then he got in his own head. And I don't think at that point of his career and his life, He was able to get himself out of his own head. It seemed like
exactly right.
Everything he dealt with the entire year. I mean, because I think it was cumulative to a certain degree. I mean, I remember us being in Portland of all places. Okay, and he had this great overtime against Portland, but he was getting booed mercilessly in Portland, in Memphis, and LeBron would try to talk us into the fact that he liked to be the villain. He did not like
he. And LeBron, then he told you afterward. He interviewed with Rachel Nichols. He was like, "I lied. I didn't like that." And then just real quick with Spo, Spo didn't have an answer. He did not have an answer for that. And Shane Battier told me, he just, like, I mean, he wasn't on the team, but they talked about it the next year when he was on the team. Spo just kind of went to the same things over and over again, hoping that, man, these superstars are going to get me out of this. And they just didn't. And then so he was ticked off. I don't know if you read the Athletic story, but he was annoyed. He was pissed off, and he sat there and, you know, put it on himself. And so it was a little bit of everybody. It wasn't just LeBron shrinking. It was, you know, coach not having the right reaction. But imagine today, not just in a game, but in a series, Spo not having an answer. That would be impossible. We'd all be like, okay, there's the adjustment. Boom. Now it's your turn, opposing coach. And that year, you know, Rick Carlisle just got him.
But you know what I think is another part of that, because it's all cycles back to Spo now, is that, like, you see the way that Spo interacts with Jimmy now, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that he went at Jimmy last year, mm-hmm. okay? He was not comfortable enough in his own skin to go at LeBron that year and impose whatever the adjustment was going to be. Because Spo has told me it wasn't really until the second year, about halfway through the second year, that he sat down with LeBron and he said, are you going to let me coach you? So that hadn't happened yet. And also what hadn't happened yet was LeBron sort of locking himself in a room for 2 weeks and then finding a media coach and all the other going to Hakeem, developing a post game and all those things. So it's almost like we looked at it like, okay, Bron is this polished superstar, but he wasn't really ready yet. And Spo wasn't really ready to be the coach to get him over the finish line.
No,
that happened the next year. It happened the next year, and it happened in part. And I remember because they started in Dallas to avenge the loss, and they beat the Mavericks they beat the brakes off them by like 35 points after waiting until Christmas, essentially, right? Yeah. Because the season started so late. And we're like, okay, this is different. Like, this is different. Like, they have a different mentality of this. They came back from the offseason different. LeBron came back different. The thing that will always depress me about those years is we didn't get to see peak Dwayne with LeBron for longer, because I feel like 3 years of Dwayne's career were basically wasted. The 08, 09, 09, 10, and 10, 11, where he was.
I'd argue two of those were. I think 08, 09 was his look how good I am year. And you needed that. Like, you needed to show that he was on the same level as LeBron and have the scoring title and everything else. Just basically him saying, if I really wanted to, could have had a couple MVPs and could have had all the individual accolades, but it's not that important to me.
Funny, because I think Heat fans look back on that with a lot of, like, you know, positive feelings and nostalgia just watching Dwayne do that. Like, you know, Spo and Dwayne had those teams looking competitive. And you just look at those rosters now. Like, how did they win 47, 48 wins?
Unbelievable.
That was like in the TD Garden when Beasley didn't play in the entire second half of that last game. And Dwayne goes to the podium. But Dwayne didn't used to speak out like this. This came – and he's like, I need help. Like, I just need help. And then it's like, all right. Here's Bron. Here's Chris.
He had the press conference after game five against the Celtics in 2010, where they lost in the first round. And he just, one of the things, you know, he said last time being out in the first round for a while, but another little nugget that I didn't even remember was when he said, I look forward to, you know, playing with some great players. And I'm just like, he just flat out said it. It's like, they're going to play. I'm going to be teammates with great players next year. You just wait and see.
He was with really a few of them. Was.
I mean, great call.
I want to ask about one guy in particular here, because you mentioned you talked to UD. I know you and I both have very warm feelings about UD. And actually, last night I was watching, and people are chanting, "We want Haslam," and I know he doesn't want that. Like, he doesn't want that. He doesn't want to be the victory cigar, the circus clown. Okay, he proved this year when he got back. He got in the game. He doesn't have to be. I've argued he's my favorite person I've ever covered in the 25 years I've been doing this, primarily Dolphins and Heat, etc. What for you has made him unique?
What's made him unique is, honestly, from the beginning, a lot of people sort of have to go through their experiences fully to have this, you know, proper perspective on things. But he got here and he was like 23, 24 years old, had already, you know, come up in Miami, lived some in Jacksonville, did a lot of, you know, the overcoming of things, whether it be being the big guy and winning state championships in Miami, and then getting to Florida, losing all the weight, going over to France, losing more weight. And like, he just came in with this sort of wise, just persona. And he's always been really nice, regardless. He's supposed to be the tough guy. You would think he's an a-hole, always really nice. And like, as you go, you can just recognize that he's gotten more and more just worldly and just, really understands people and just knows what relationships are all about, and just an awesome dude. And I'll always, you know, I'll always remember him showing up the first day. And I'd been covering the Heat for what, three seasons now, two plus seasons at that point. And he comes in, and I covered him in college, and I just didn't recognize him. I was like, because he was wearing braids and he was looked like half the person. I was like, that can't be Udonis Haslem. And it was. And then all of a sudden, 20 years later, this MF'er is still here. And like, and you think about the eras that he's went through. And, you know, right now, I think the embodiment that was Udonis Haslem, like his lasting impact to me, was when I saw Jimmy Butler forehead to forehead with Grant Williams. All I saw was Udonis Haslem. Mm-hmm. All I saw was Udonis either doing that himself or empowering Jimmy. Not that Jimmy needs the empowerment, but empowering Jimmy to do that, and everybody recognizing that, oh, that's just what he does, and that's just who he is. And that to me was 1,000% Udonis and his influence. Just a great guy and great, great family man, and, you know, not perfect in any way, but, you know, knows that and kind of works his way through that as well. So just a great influence and a great representation of what this community in South Florida means.
What I've said is he's had what, almost 200 teammates at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anybody say anything bad about him. Ever. I and that's not true. Any of the other guys you mentioned, there's somebody didn't like playing with them, thought they got too much shine. I've never heard anything. To me, his legacy is the way that, and I'll bring up the word again, the undrafteds, the guys, mm-hmm. who look at him, the way that they rally towards him. There's all these guys around the NBA who owe something to him, and he'll never ask for it to be repaid. That's the amazing thing about him. And it's why in this town, like, there have been better athletes. You can't leave him off a Miami Heat top 10 list. You can't. Mm-hmm. I don't care where he falls, because he does embody all of it. All right, final one. We appreciate the time with Israel. Check out the podcast. I was going to write a book, and it just never happened. So now I'm just going to listen to your podcast.
All right. About how there's plenty of room for a book. Yeah, after
all the podcast. All my notes are in storage somewhere, and probably never to be found. If they win this championship,
mm-hmm.
is this the best one? I'm not saying the hardest one, because it's clearly the hardest one, okay? But is it the best one? Because you covered, I mean, the first one you covered was 06, okay? I was mm-hmm. there with you covering it. And then obviously LeBron's, and that's your first organization is always going to be significant. Dwayne's first. The second one, you know, LeBron's breakthrough, you know, that team cutting through all of this clutter and crap and everything else to win. The next one, having to win on a Ray Allen shot and then close it the next, and to finish a season that had 27 game winning streak. But is this the, and then almost winning in 2020 in the bubble, obviously, right. Is this the best one?
Okay, so I've been thinking about this for a couple of days now, you know, assuming they can go on and win it, which, don't look at those box scores against Denver in the regular season if you want to think they're going to win it.
No, don't look at them in the last 10 years, actually. Don't look at anything they've done in Denver ever. Just don't.
Here's where I landed on this is they're honestly the same. All the same for different reasons, because they're different. Okay. So the first one, the thing that was amazing, it was the first one. That whole feeling of like, wow, they're in the finals. Like, even if you're not playing in it, it just feels different. You're even more nervous. It's like, I've been watching this team all year long. I didn't know they were finals good. You know what I mean? Like, it's felt so strange for a team that's never made it there. Right. And then, you know, they win it. And you win it with a guy who are just like, holy crap, that could be Michael Jordan part two. And so that feeling of like, not only did we break through on the first try, I mean, you don't count the year before in conference finals, breakthrough really on the first try, but you got this guy for a long time now. And so that's just like, it immediately like sets you in to, I am a championship fan. It's official. Like, there's nothing you can do about that for the next 10 years. That's the baseline of what I'm expecting. So that just elevates you so much. The other ones with LeBron, it was so, everything was so elevated. Like, there's just the you had goosebumps, and the hairs on your arms were always elevated because it just came with all that pressure. And the only reason that doesn't fly ahead of these other two, if this year's happened, is because it came with that level of angst as well. And some people say it makes you feel alive, but I just want to be happy. Like, I don't want to be nervous going into it. And then this one shows you that, man, the organization took all that and still has that championship ability, but the underdog version of it makes you think literally every single year you're in the playoffs, you're going to have this thought. You're going to have this possibility that, man, we can do this. And this feeling of house money wins is way different than any of the other ones. So it's just like, when you think about it, you're just like, as a fan, it's the best possible scenario. I can win championships in any sort of setting, in any sort of feel good, and just make that for myself, or they can make that for me. And so I feel like, yeah, they're all the same until one of them sort of comes repetitive, right? If they create another super team and that super team wins it, then the first super team's still going to feel better than the second super team. But when you're doing it all in these different fashions, it's just like, no, they all feel just as good for the different reasons.
Yeah, this one will be pure joy for people.
100%.
The previous two were relief.
If you were to gauge the serotonin levels at championship time each year, probably the same for different reasons, but probably the same.
Bye. Okay, and we lost Ethan again. I don't know what he is doing.
It's perfect timing. He's doing it on purpose.
I mean, I guess I'm going to come in here with another impromptu question. Oh, never mind. Ethan is back.
I'm back. Well, let's close here. Let's close. I apologize. I just keep disappearing at the worst possible time. So here's this.
I'm sorry to everybody listening to this. For those not watching on YouTube, Ethan keeps coming in and out. I don't know what is going on with his connection. Izzy, appreciate you for coming on. And with that,
somebody really doesn't want me to get off this take. All right, we're going to do this quickly. Thanks to Alex. Thanks to MiamiGamingParties.com, MortgageBuyerHouse.com.
Is this a joke?
Don't forget 4 years of heat with iHeartRadio and the NBA, hosted by yours truly, Israel Gutierrez. First episode drops Tuesday. That's tomorrow, May 23rd. One episode every week, except for two episodes. We're dropping two episodes those weeks.
And one more question for you. 2 weeks. This is it. Pat Riley told me if they ever won another championship, he told me this in 2015 when he was so angry about LeBron and he was riffing to me in his office for 45 minutes about it. He said, we ever win another one, he says, I'm not even going to be at the parade. He says, me and Chris, his wife, he says, we're going straight to the airport with a bottle of wine to the south of France, and you're never going to hear from us again. Do you think, knowing him the way you know him, if they win a championship, that that's it?
I believe all except for the last part. I believe he'll be gone. I believe he'll go to the south of France, and I believe we'll hear from him again the beginning of next season, where he says, man, remember how cool last year was? And I think he'll always be a part. I think he'll always be visible, a figurehead, if you will, even if he's not actually making any decisions or even in any meetings. But I think he's established enough, and there's enough people, enough fingerprints there, like Lonzo Mourning, or obviously the respect that Spo's getting, that he can actually move on if they win another one and just say, my work is done here. Because Spo immediately, like just this with this run, is already, the buy-in is automatic. You sign with this team, if you've never played for him, doesn't matter your role, the buy-in is automatic. And that's all pretty much Riley ever strived for. And so, yeah, so you get that from the organization and from at the coach level, then Pat Riley's work here is done. And yeah, like I said, he'll still be around because he's too good looking to not be on camera every once in a while, but he's I could see him leaving for sure.
Funniest thing is he didn't talk to us the entire year, I think, because he didn't want to talk about this team. And now all of a sudden they may win a championship. He'll be talking the day after, I'm sure, about that. Biggest lie they ever told is that Pat's going to Malibu to retire. I don't think that's ever actually happening. All right, thanks to Ethan, Israel.
You're testing the powers of your jinx with this episode right now.
In all kinds of different ways. Well, I don't know. You're just going to move me off the screen again. Check out the podcast, 4 Years of Heat. We'll post it up on the Twitter account as well. And again, thanks to all of our sponsors. We'll be back with full coverage of Game 4, possible closeout game for the Heat on Tuesday night.
Thank you for listening to the Five on the Floor on the Five Regional Sports Network.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.